While the news continues to heat up about a potential ground invasion by the United States against Iran or some kind of ground operation, we're still trying to talk about peace talks and 15-point plans or 14-point plans, 6-point plans, all kinds of things are rolling around out there. Question is, what's real, what's not, where is this going, and what if the prospect if this extends into a longer war than just a few weeks? We're going to go through this today with our friend of the show, Larry Johnson, former CIA analyst and also host of Sonar21.com, and always a source of great information, son of the New American Revolution on Substack.com. Larry's always welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Danny.
Well, listen, we've got a lot to talk about here today, yeah. And I want to talk about some of the breaking news just kind of right off the top here. It's always a difficult time in time of war to understand what's true, what's not. These day and age, because of the rise of deepfake videos, some of which can be incredibly lifelike, it's hard to know what's true and what's not. But there's some things that are floating out there right now that we need to talk about, because evidence suggests that an F-18 has been knocked down by the IRGC. And they provided this video evidence from it. Even a deep fake can be made to look grainy and whatnot different to give it that sense of realism. So I don't know for sure. CENTCOM, I think, is denying that this is true. But right. Larry, what do you say based on what you're seeing in this video here?
Well, I know for a fact that with the so-called crash of the KC-135, that the Department of Defense said, oh, there's just two planes collided and that's why it crashed. No. That's a bald-faced lie. It was shot down. It was hit by a missile. I know that definitively. So if they're lying about that, they're probably lying about this. I can understand them, at least right now, initially lying about it, because you've got a pilot ejecting, and he's over Iranian territory. You might want to have a chance of inserting, a combat search and rescue team to go in and try to rescue the pilot. So, that would be a justification for CENTCOM lying about it at this point. You know, once they get the pilot recovered and safe, or if they can, then they come back and say, okay, yeah, it was shot down. But, so right now I would understand why they would lie about this. But, they've been doing their best to cover up casualties in the past, and refused to admit that the KC-135 was shot down.
Yeah, and it's hard to say here, because some things look a little off. I mean, like, for example, when it shows the two separate angles of the what looks to be the interceptor missile coming up to hit it from the two different angles, they don't quite look like they match up to me, so I'm not sure. Right. We don't know, but the fact is that that's what's being claimed, so we want to cover that up. But there's additional information that you have, which I have not seen on any social media so far, and that is this photograph of the USS Gerald R. Ford in port here, which allegedly, because of a laundry fire that caught, that was burning for a day and a half or something like that, they left. Yeah. There was reports already it's going to be in dock for a year, more than a year, to have repairs. And one thinks, wow, that's a lot of time to repair of a fire in a laundry basket. But this doesn't look like a laundry basket fire. What do you make of this?
Yeah, it looks like something bigger than that. You want us to believe that lint from the dryer, anybody that ever used an electric dryer or a gas-fired dryer, there's lint, cotton comes off, and yeah, that could catch fire. But a 30-hour fire out of control burning steel? I guess it's possible, but I find it highly unlikely. And this is, I think, another example where they don't want to admit that there was actually probably combat damage. That this was not even a sabotage by the crew.
And what do you think about this? I mean, that if this is true, if these photographs are accurate, and I think Gary had a second angle of it there, it looked like, you can't hide this. This is not something you can say, oh, no, well, it was a fire. I mean, there is physical damage clearly from some projectile hitting the ship from the outside, if this is real.
Yeah. I agree. That's what it looks like. It looks like something got on there. Now, we don't know about casualties either. We do have, Andrei Martyanov, who you've had on, he put a video up last week of the USS Forrestal from Vietnam, 1967, when there was a pilot, a guy named John McCain. I suppose he was somebody in U.S. politics later. He's had what was called a negligent discharge of a missile from his aircraft on the deck of the USS Forrestal, set off a fire, killed 19 sailors, wounded 160, and ignited a fire that lasted 19 hours. So and Andre was using that as a comparison, say, okay, here we had actual ordnance that went off and it caused the fire and caused all, and it took him 19 hours. And now we're being told it took 30 hours, 11 more hours to put out this fire on board the ship. I mean, good God, sounds like it was a raging inferno.
Yeah.
To go on that long and to create that kind of damage, and then they're like passing, oh, that was nothing. just a little fire,
And then, how do you square that it's going to take over a year in dock to get a lot of it fixed? Something's not adding up here.
Yeah. So, you get a good sense when the government's lying to you. And on this one, there's no operational security issues at stake, and coming out saying, yeah, this carrier is basically toast. It's the most expensive aircraft carrier in our arsenal, and it's on the bench.
Yeah. I mean, this is the first of its kind. It's supposed to be the flagship. And now it's limped into port for whatever reason, and it's no longer in the game. I want to go into something else that there's this morning. I'm sorry. Yesterday afternoon, there was a press conference, in the Oval Office where I don't even remember what the primary purpose of it was, but of course they always ask questions about other things like the war here. And President Trump was making a bunch of statements, and then what really got my attention was Secretary of War Pete Hegseth was making some statements. I won't show you that video here. I'm sure you've probably seen it, where he's basically said, we have the most amazing military in the history of the world, and we have defeated this big modern Iranian force, and he used past tense, already defeated. That just shows how incredible we are. And then I don't know if it was in direct response to it or if it was just coincidental, but here's what the IRGC had to say about how they're defeated.
قدرت راهبردی که از آن دم می‌زدید تبدیل به شکست راهبردی شده. مدعی ابرقدرتی دنیا اگر می‌توانست از این مخمصه رها شود تا حالا شده بود. اسم شکستتان را توافق نگذارید. سطح خود درگیری هایتان به مرحله مذاکره خودتان با خودتان رسیده، نه خبری از سرمایه گذاری هایتان در منطقه خواهد بود و نه قیمت سابق انرژی و نفت را خواهید دید تا وقتی که بفهمید ثبات در منطقه توسط دست قدرتمند نیروهای مسلح ما تضمین می شود. کسی همچون ما با کسی مثل شما کنار نخواهد آمد، نه حالا و نه هیچ وقت دیگری.
And there you see now
that sounded like a loser right there, man. He sounded defeated.
he definitely did. He was just almost begging for mercy. And you see here, even Reuters kind of plays off of that. Iran military spokesman says U.S. is negotiating with itself. All kinds of rumors floating around that there's this 15-point peace plan out there. Just let me ask you all on the surface of it. Let's look at that 15-point plan, is at least what's been reported so far. Something been floated from the White House to the Iranian side. And Gary, I'm sorry, you had some breaking news a minute ago about Caroline Leavitt said something about that. What did she say about that 15-point plan?
Oh yeah, she was just saying that the reports that are out there is some legitimacy, but there is some also bad reporting, additional reporting that's not reflective of the plan. And
did she say which was which?
No. She didn't divvy down into it.
So I guess we're left to guess which was true and which was not. I guess if you like it, it must have been good. And if you didn't like it, well, that must have been the false reporting. I don't know. But Larry, I mean, just off the cuff of it, I mean, given the fact that we had, and I think you and I have talked about this already, a golden deal in our hand on the 26th and the 27th of February that would have forestalled any of this war, and Iran was willing to give up all kinds of stuff, to include zero uranium enrichment, Why do you think that they would be willing to negotiate now when they have control of the strait?
No, they're not. And that's the lie that's being told. Iran's not ready to negotiate. They're not looking to negotiate. And they made it a point. They said, look, two previous times that we've been suckered into these negotiations, the United States has turned around and attacked us or helped attack us. And so there's no trust. There's no foundation of trust. So the kind of negotiation Iran will deal with is they're going to issue their demands. And if the United States wants to start answering those demands and agreeing to those, then they'll have a basis for moving forward. Until then, you know, this play this week, you know, Trump is saying, so-called 5-day ceasefire. And, White House threatens more attacks if Iran refuses a deal. Well, Iran's refused the deal, so the United States is going to start attacks. And I believe those attacks will start early Saturday morning, you know, after midnight.
And by the way, just kind of to bolster that, this is Zulfagari in an X post where he said, our position has not changed from day one and will not change. We will never reach an agreement with people like you, not now, not ever. What you call strategic power has become strategic failure. So not a lot of ambiguity there. So what does that tell you about if that previous headline there is true, that we're going to attack if they don't make a deal? I mean, what's coming?
Well, so what Trump pulled off on Monday when he came out with all this upbeat, oh, we're in discussions, oh, we're making progress, that was drafted early in the morning. And I think you and Doug McGregor talked about it, the corruption, that there was some insider trading. They knew that announcement was coming out. So the world was thinking the price of oil was going to continue to rise. And these guys bet, nope, it's going to fall. And, they get to make a prediction about where the price of oil is going to be. And, they basically shorted it, and they made money because Trump's goal was twofold: boost the stock market, drive down the price of oil. And the traders on Wall Street are dumb enough to believe what he was saying, that, oh, yeah, we're in talks with the Iranians. They're not listening to the Iranians, what they're saying, because if they were, the price of oil would still be climbing. And it's back up today. And the stock market would still be falling. So this was pure manipulation. There was no seriousness with Trump in that regard, because what we now know is on the 12th of March, there started a massive airlift from U.S. special, I'll call them U.S. special operations military bases around the United States, from 12 March until, the 23rd. So over those 11 days, there were 35 C-17 flights going from the United States to two bases in Jordan and one base in Israel. Where were they flying from? Well, they went to Hunter Army Air Base in Georgia. That's home to an element of Task Force 160, the Night Stalkers. And it's also home to the 75th Ranger Regiment, 1st Battalion. Those flights, several flights from there. When you realize a C-17 can hold only 104 soldiers at combat, kitted out for combat. So if you got four flights, maybe two of those taking 200 of those soldiers, you know, at least a company element or a couple of companies. They go to Joint Base Lewis-McChord, again, a major base for the 75th Rangers, and that's the 2nd Battalion of the 75th, I believe. Going to Fort Bragg, home Delta Force, 82nd Airborne. Flying out of Oceana Air Station. Gee, who's there? Damn Neck, Virginia, SEAL Team 6. And you've got all the East Coast SEAL teams, the SEAL Teams 2, 4, 8, 10. Another flights, Fort Campbell, Kentucky. That is the headquarters for the Special Operations Air Regiments, also known as the Night Stalkers Task Force 160. In my experience, when you see this kind of deployment, it can only be one of two things. It's an exercise, or it's an actual mission. I don't see this as an exercise. And the fact that it looks like they're bringing in both SEAL Team 6 and Delta Force, by themselves, those are just, you know, they're not an assault force. They're good at rescuing hostages, that kind of thing. But, you know, somehow they're getting activated. But they're being accompanied by the 75th Rangers. And I recall in all the exercises that I scripted, when they involved either Delta or SEAL Team 6, you always involved the Rangers. You know, at minimum, they go in and seize an airfield, you know, and accompany that. And then you got the 82nd. So it looks to me like what's happening, that five-day, so that started on March 12th. March 13 was when Trump activated the 31st MEU, the Marine Expeditionary Unit. And they started setting sail. When do they arrive in theater? Friday or Saturday. Gee, that's right at the end of that five-day period. The 11th MEU is about a week behind. But what one scenario I could see as possible, and because they're bringing in multiple elements of the Special Operations Air Regiment. It's not just one unit. So that tells me they're going to have two vectors of attack at a minimum. And the likely targets would be Karg Island up in the northeast corner of the Persian Gulf, and the Keshem Island, which is right there at the bend of the Strait of Hormuz. This is bad. And then I got a note from a friend of mine who was he was in contact with somebody with Delta Force, you know, one of his friends. And he said, this friend told him, he says, look, I heard from two different friends in the SOF community, and that's Special Operations Forces, that a bunch of tier one guys shipped out Thursday night for a major operation, probably an island, to take place by this weekend, and that a lot of people were concerned the op had not been thoroughly thought through and that they'd be badly overexposed. One guy said no effort was made at a blocking force. And he said, I hope they send a priest along who can last rights us, which is not the kind of talk you usually hear from those types. So, you know, the word circling in the soft community. And, you know, I think Trump was playing this to, you know, say be upbeat, 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 you know, manipulate the stock market. When the stock market closes, you know, 4 p.m. on Friday afternoon. After that point, Trump will make an announcement. Oh, you know, the negotiations are off. The Iranians have rejected it. They're being intransigent. So we're now going to show them. Giving further support to that is Trump was supposed to attend a fundraiser, charity fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago Friday night. He was going to be the special guest. He's canceled that. And he was supposed to speak at CPAC on Sunday, and he's canceled that. So those are, again, sort of what I call warning indicators that, you know, he's right, clearing his schedule, so he's not going to be available. If the United States proceeds with this, and again, I have no inside information that they're going to, but I'm just, you know, looking at this analytically. You don't deploy those units just to say, oh, let's put them out in theater. They're planning to do something, and they're involving the whole menu of the special operations community. And this is when you're going to put your most skilled assets at this kind of risk, you better have a good plan. But the word circulating from those operators is nobody's done any damn planning on this.
Well, and you have to wonder just what in the world is going on here. I mean, what would be the objectives? Because there's been a couple of bits of information out, which is important on the other side of this potential operation here. Number one is that the Iraqi side has said, hey, you know, our the PMF, the Shia militia that's part of the Iraqi security forces, they're aligned with Iran, but they are part of the Iraqi security forces. They have been authorized to retaliate against the U.S. and Israel strike that kills their fighters, that has killed their fighters, rather, in Anbar province. There's also information that the Houthis may finally be getting involved. This, they have threatened in the Bab al-Mandab that they may close the Red Sea off to the U.S. And so who knows whether they're going to. But, I mean, you could get a situation here to where you could have the Bab al-Mandab shut down, the Strait of Hormuz shut down. And all of this is if we attempt to attack anybody inside, you know, on the ground inside of Iran. Because, for example, and this is what the parliamentary speaker for Iran has said: we're closely monitoring all U.S. movements in the region, especially troop deployments. What the generals have broke, the soldiers can't fix. Instead, they will fall victim to Netanyahu's delusions. Do not test our resolve to defend our land. You know, we've seen a lot of times where Zelensky, for example, in the Russia-Ukraine war, he made a lot of boasts and a lot of pretty grandiose claims that he was never able to back up on the battlefield. Do you see the Iranian side here being similar to that, or can they make good on some of these boasts?
Oh, Iran can make very good on the threats. You know, this is what doesn't make sense. You know, we've seen, you know, the little old lady from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, you know, he's been talking about the need to take Karg Island, General Kellogg, you know, the Captain Crunch of the Trump administration has also been suggesting it now. And why? Well, so Iran pumps a significant amount of oil out of that, out of Karg, and that is then delivered to China and other places. Note, just as a side note, but to show you how much this whole thing has backfired on the Trump administration, before the war started, Iran was pumping 1.1 million barrels per day of oil, and it was being sold at $47 a barrel. Today, they're pumping 1.5 million barrels, so a 400,000 barrel increase, and they're selling it at $97 a barrel. So they're rolling in cash. So this was supposed to, you know, remember, sanctions are supposed to decimate Iran, but instead, it's you know, making them flush with cash. So you've got that, but let's say you know the reason Scott Bessent and Trump lifted the oil sanctions on Iran. Because remember, you apply sanctions to get control of them, to try to force them to do your will. It didn't work, but that was the principle. But now you're lifting the sanctions. Why? Because Bessent and Trump are terrified that with the skyrocketing price of oil, if they don't keep it tamped down by both making sure that there's enough supply out there that it's not going to be terribly severe, then your choice now is to attack the island, get control of that oil, which Iran can then turn off and not allow to go onto the island anymore, which then will reduce the oil supply that you're claiming you want to uphold. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And seizing that island doesn't ensure that you're going to close off, open up the Strait of Hormuz. In fact, just the opposite.
Yeah.
If you see Karg, the Iranians have already said, if you do that, we're going to mine the whole damn Gulf, not just the Strait, the whole damn Gulf. Not a single ship will be safe to move. So they'll completely shut it down. Now, this gets back to what's the military objective of taking Keshem Island, which is down right there at the turn in the Strait of Hormuz. It'd be one thing if the Strait was, if traffic could not pass through that narrow opening because you had guns and, you know, artillery pieces or missile launchers or whatever right there on that island, that was the only thing preventing ships from going through. Well, that's not the case. And there are at least, I forget how many, I think there's 150,000 Iranians on that island. So let's say you land 5,000 troops. So those troops are already outnumbered, and there's no way they can control those civilians. So they're gonna have a problem of possibly, you know, U.S. soldiers massacring Iranian civilians. Yeah, that'll play well around the world, and I'm sure that'll make Iran want to give up. Yeah. So the military objective here is you got to step back and say, how does Iran shut the Gulf? They shut the Gulf with the threat that we're going to hit you with mines, we're going to hit you with drones, we're going to hit you with underwater drones, we're going to hit you with submarines and torpedoes, we're going to hit you with fast speedboats that can launch missiles, and we've got missiles shipped to shore and artillery and other missiles.
but that's it. I mean, other than all
other
those,
than that,
whatever it is, 100 so what, categories of
weapons. So what's the military solution there? There isn't one that there's no way that we could assemble the size of force that would be required to take complete control of that entire coastline. I mean, you're talking maybe a million men. And then how do you get those million men there? So this is like one of those things that really it's not even practical to do.
Okay, Larry, I got to correct you here, because it turns out we now have proof positive that you're actually wrong. Don't want to be
the first
or anything,
time.
but I mean, we got to be honest and unintimidated and uncompromised on everything. So we know now, because President Trump himself has said that he has used his primary advisors on war and peace, specifically the ones that advised him whether he needed to start this war here, this so-called imminent threat, was Jared Kushner and also Steve Witkoff. Those were the primary two guys, not the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, not the CIA director, not General Cooper or Admiral Cooper, none of those guys. No, those are the ones he listens to. But there's also a general that he listens to. And unfortunately, this is going to expose why you would never be a general material if you had been in the Army. No intent to insult you here, because here's what General Keith Kellogg says about how this can definitely succeed.
I'm a big believer right now we just need to secure the Strait of Hormuz. And you can do that with two amphibious ready groups, marine ready groups, that are headed in that way. They're a self-contained unit. They've got aviation assets. They've got helicopter assets. They've got 2,500 Marines on each one of the ARGs. And they can open up the straits out there and occupy that ground. Look, I'm a big believer in putting boots on the ground, not necessarily into Iran, but taking Karg Island and also taking the Strait of Hormuz. Look, we kind of need to do it the way the Romans used to do it. You know, your legion's on the ground to secure the territory and give them confidence they can do it, that we can open up the strait. Look, I know there's risk involved. There's always risk involved. But those young men and women, they understand the risk involved on taking both Karg and opening up the Strait of Hormuz as well. So they've got the ability to do it, the amphibious ready groups of the Marines. They can open up the lower half of the strait, do it. And then I turn around to maybe the 82nd Airborne Division or Rangers or somebody like that to take Karg Island.
So there you have it. The Roman legions, that is what you didn't get. You didn't understand that a bunch of guys with spears. That's a good analogy for what we're going to do here. I mean, I don't have any words that I can say on the air. What do you say to that?
Hail Caesar!
And I'm sorry, let me just point out, because in case he was speaking real fast at the end, let me tell you guys what he said there militarily. He said that there are two Marine ready groups, the 31st and the 11th MEUs, and the 82nd Airborne. So he's saying, look, all you got to do is to roll these guys, the two MEUs, up in here. First, take these islands here. Then he was talking about Keshem, I assume, because he said in the bend of the strait.
Right.
And then once you have that, then you can send the 82nd in here to land on Karg Island up here. And bam, there you have it. We've got control. What say you?
Wasn't he the one that used the – oh, no, I'm sorry. That was Lindsey Graham that talked about Iwo Jima. The Karg Island Iwo Jima is 1.5 times larger than Karg Island. And we took Iwo Jima with 70,000 Marines, and I think there were at least 30,000 casualties. You know, 4,000 dead and, you know 26,000 wounded, severely wounded in many cases. Yeah, that makes sense. Look, the ships will then have to be within 5 miles, 10 miles of Iran's shoreline. Sitting ducks. Those ships will be hit and sunk before they can even get online to offload Marines. And yeah, each of those MEUs, the Marine Expeditionary Unit, has 2,200 to 2,500 Marines. But of those, only about 800 to 1,000 are what you would call assault troops. Everybody else is in a supporting role. So you're gonna take an island with 150,000 people with basically 800 Marines. Yeah, good luck with that. That should work out swell. Ignoring the fact that Iran can respond with artillery because the artillery will reach that island, with drones, with missiles, those troops would be sitting ducks. And because they don't have any prepared positions there, bunkers that they can go hide in. And Iran has been preparing for this contingency for years. It's just sheer madness.
And unfortunately, that's not the end of the madness, because it got a little bit worse. In that same interview there, Brian Kilmeade is not the first guy I'm going to lean on when I hear somebody says, hey, give me some good military advice. But even Brian Kilmeade in this interview here, when he heard that part of what General Kellogg said, he interrupted him and asked a question. And then the answer is even more head scratcher. Watch this.
When you talk about risk, you talk about when you take an island, you also become a target, and they could go for try to get lucky once. Would you go to that island with missile defense, with some type of drone defense?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you take it out.
But, General, do we go with the island and be able to deploy some type of anti-drone technology and some missile defense? So when we get there, we have some protection.
Absolutely. But you have protection with the ARG itself, with the ships of the ARG that are there. Plus, you have the air support of the ARG, the U.S. Marine Corps that's got there. I have great confidence in our men and women in the military, and especially of the Marine Corps, that they're able to do that job. And I think it's a two-part effort, though. I just don't think you can only open the strait, but you can also go after Karg Island, which is basically the economic lifeline. See, I'm one of those believers that I know you're talking about boots on the ground and people rub their hands in a negative manner or basically clutch their pearls. But the fact is, over time, over history, the only way you solve a solution is to put boots on the ground and control the environment.
So all these pearl clutchers, who cares? I mean, I know there will be some casualties, and, you know, those troops, all those men and women, I mean, they're cool with it, no problem. But if you don't have boots on the ground, he's talking about concepts here. Oh, yes, the Marine ships, the ARGs, they've got air defense. Well, in isolation, sure. And in a computer simulation, yeah, no problem. Yeah. But look, when you're talking about they're going to be sitting ducks, as you just said here, it's not going to be long before they won't be able to provide any air defense for themselves, much less anybody on one of these islands. And what happens next? But let me just ask you, I mean, what were your thoughts on the callousness with which he kind of dismissed the casualties we might suffer?
You remember that one scene from Titanic where Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet are out there on their bows with the arms outstretched? I want to take Kellogg and put him on the bow of one of those landings, you know, the landing helicopter deck, the LHD. That's one of the amphibious ships carrying the Marines. Put him out on the point. Let's see what, you know, what he's really made of, because the fact of the matter, it's shocking, and I'm not trying to be using ad hominem terms, but the level of ignorance displayed by this man, who was a general officer, is shocking. Let's dress Kellogg up and drag like Kate Winslet and have him out there on the bow of the ship. He apparently has not paid attention. You know, he was working the war in Ukraine, but he didn't pay attention to what all the different drone attacks were capable of doing to massed groups of soldiers. There's a reason but the Russians and Ukrainians adapted pretty quick. They realized, hey, if we bunch up together, man, we make a big fat target with those first-person drones, and similarly with the Shahids and others. You know, Iran's not some backward country that just has a limited supply. They were supplying Russia early on with Shahids, and then Russia, you know, got into a position where it was able to start producing its own and doing its own upgrades. So if this mission goes forward, and I'm afraid it is going to, I think this was pre-planned. That's why you start alerting soldiers and units to move on March 12th. It was because this is not something that Trump is saying on Monday morning, okay, we're going to have a five-day ceasefire, then we'll see what's happening. And then you get to day Friday and say, hey, those Iranians haven't done so let's go get them, guys. No, you're teeing this up. You're putting all these assets in motion. And, you know, what's sort of shocking is that it's out in the open. I mean, I'm not divulging classified information. It's on X. It's on Instagram. Because they are so clueless about how to maintain OPSEC and movement so as you don't attract press attention. And so, you know, if I can read it, I'm pretty sure that intelligence analysts in Iran and Russia and China can also read it.
And Larry, let me tell you one of the reasons why this is so shocking, that his lack of grasp of just basic elementary fundamentals of combat operations. Check this out. This is on November 27, 2017, Major General Keith Kellogg became the 40th All-America 6th, the commander of the 82nd Airborne Division. And I guess he looks a little younger back then. Yeah. I guess. But he was the division commander of the 82nd itself. How then can this guy who was the division commander not understand such basic elementary fundamentals? And let's go back to the map again, because he says, listen, again, conceptually, you just can't win without boots on the ground. Now, you can't win a war. That's what you and I think we're talking about that before this started. You can't go in with just air power and bomb your way in a country that's four times bigger than Iraq. And here's Iraq and here's Iran, with so much of this mountainous terrain here on any side where you would try to have a ground operation. And so it would be suicidal to do so. But here he is still saying, let's go in not with, you know, 500,000-600,000 troops to go through this incredibly difficult terrain, which would be suicidal to ever like take the capital city. But even what we're talking about now here in these areas down here, whether it's Karg or Kashim Island down here, you're talking about, you've got a pinprick. I mean, we couldn't even plot that. There's so few guys. If all of them came together, it's not going to make any difference. And yet there he was with conviction trying to tell us all why this is a good idea.
Well, my first year of training at CIA, I went through a special program, and they put us through a 12-week paramilitary course. And the reason for that was prior to like 1985, they were still getting people coming into the agency who had military experience in Vietnam. But now, as they got into the mid-80s, they were getting people that didn't have military experience. And they wanted us to make sure that we understood that it's one thing to write an order out on paper and ask somebody to go do something, like say, okay, we're going to ask this group of 10 guys, and they're going to be carrying 90 pounds apiece, and they've got to cross a mountain range that's 5,000 feet high, and so we want them to do it in an hour and a half, and so it looks good on paper. You know, you calculate and say, oh, that's possible, until you actually go out and put on the ruck and have to walk up the mountain and try to avoid detection. And then you're dealing with weather conditions and you're dealing with rough terrain. All of a sudden you realize, you know, what we thought was going to take an hour and a half might take 8 hours. And they actually put us through an exercise where, you know, I remember my ruck was about 110 pounds. I drew the short straw. I had to carry the damn radio. It was called a Prick 77.
I remember that very well.
Yeah.
BRC-77.
Yeah, heavy. And then the batteries that go along with it. And then you're being chased by helicopters and other things. So you learn real quick. And then about resupply. Because you can only carry so much food and ammunition. And then when you start shooting through that ammunition, where's your next supply coming from? So, you know, I at least acquired a basic understanding of logistics, and the need that once you deploy an 82nd Airborne team, they may be great in combat for the first 24 hours, but then what? How do they get resupplied? And securing those lines of communication is critical. And that's what, yeah, oh boy, yeah, there you go. Yeah,
just people want to understand that if that was added to your pack,
yeah,
holy cow, man.
Yeah, just the upper half is what I had in my pack on top. I mean, it was, it was difficult.
That's what you
got to wonder. I mean, did Kellogg fly at altitude too long with no oxygen? I mean, did it burn up some brain cells? Because what he's talking about is just it does not reflect serious military thinking. And I'm not trying to pass myself off as Clausewitz or, you know, some great military strategist, but I understand what the human body's capable of doing and what you need to do if you're in a threat environment. And my God, when you're putting 800 guys, maybe let's say all 2,200 go on shore, you're up against a population of 150,000. What happens if 10,000 of them have weapons? Okay. So all of a sudden, I don't care how good a shooter you are. If you're outnumbered 10 to 1, the odds of surviving that engagement are not good. Just ask General Custer.
And that's if all 2,200 went on with rifles, which is not going to happen, of course.
Correct.
And, you know, let's add to the challenge. And to an extent, I can understand partially why the American public is so confused on this matter and why they're deceived so easily. Because you have, here's General Keith Kellogg. We're talking about the 82nd Airborne. He was the commander of the 82nd Airborne. So people will think, well, obviously he knows what he's talking about, because they would imagine that all the things you just talked about,
yeah,
he would definitely know, has been experienced here. We know President Trump is listening to. He's obviously listening to Keith Kellogg. He was the vice president's national security advisor in the last administration. He was President Trump's hand-selected point man for the Ukraine war this time. So he's listening to these guys. And another guy he listens to is General Jack Keane, who said this about the possibility of having a negotiated settlement.
I'm skeptical here. We're dealing with a regime as pathological liars and cheaters, and they have done everything they can to deceive us in the past. And just prior to going into this conflict, the Iranians were lying to us and not willing to be forthcoming in terms of a deal. And obviously we began hostilities. There were other reasons for it, but that was certainly one of them. So we have to look at these people. We know who they are, 47 years here, and President Trump knows exactly who these people are. And I think he knows what he wants out of this. He wants essentially for them to surrender everything that we would take from them by force.
So he just wants, when President Trump says, I'm looking for unconditional surrender, and that's what General Keane is saying, one wonders, was that part of the negotiation process and the discussion, the analysis, yeah, or so? Because certainly we know that General Keane has lots of connections inside the Trump administration. But man, what is that? Well, let's try and be gracious a little bit and say, yeah, do you think that President Trump is getting all this advice? And by the way, I have to add one more in there. Ted Cruz has recently taken credit for being the one that talked Trump into this war. He boasted about that over the weekend, I think it was. If that's who President Trump is getting advice from, can we be shocked that he's making decisions like he appears to be making now with this ground operation?
Yeah, no, he's told a pack of lies, as was evident in what Jack Keane was saying. It wasn't Iran that on February 26 in Geneva promised, yeah, we're going to have progress in negotiations. Here's what we're willing to do. Here's the concessions we're willing to make. It wasn't Iran that launched the attack on us 2 days later. That was us. And he keeps talking about, oh, Iran's been attacking us for 46 years. Well, that, again, that's just a goddamn lie. And let's go back to September of 1980. Jimmy Carter's president. Zbigniew Brzezinski says, National Security Advisor, we got American hostages in Tehran. And we get the wink and a nod to a guy named Saddam Hussein. Hey, you know what? If you go ahead and start this war with Iran, we'll help you out. And that'll take some pressure off us and maybe get the Iranians willing to negotiate on the hostages. Then Ronald Reagan comes into office 4 months later. And he's got a guy named Don Rumsfeld that sends over to Baghdad, and he's glad-handing with Saddam Hussein. And said, you know what, Saddam? We're going to provide you with some chemicals that you can use to make chemical weapons, which we did. And in August of 1983, Saddam launches the first chemical attacks against Iran and then continues to with 19 more chemical attacks until August of 1988. During that entire time, the United States is supplying the chemicals. It was out of one company was up in Maryland. And then we're carrying intelligence to Iraq, intelligence that Iraq can be using against Iran. And I know the guy, Walter Patrick Lang, who was the chief of DIA's Middle East division at one point in the 90s. But back then, he'd just come off being defense attaché to Yemen. And then previous to that, Saudi Arabia. So here he was hand-carrying intelligence to the Iraqis. That's called, they are our proxy. They killed 300,000 Iranians at least. And we were the ones encouraging them to use chemical weapons. So whenever I hear Jack Keane talk this bullshit about Iran attacking us, oh, we also then, we've taken a terrorist group, the Mujahideen al-Khalq, a group that was designated as a foreign terrorist organization in 1997, even though they had been active in terrorist activities for the previous 30 years, including killing American servicemen in Iran back under the Shah. The CIA takes control of them in 2004, trains them, arms them, equips them, provides them safe haven, and then uses them to carry out terrorist attacks in Iran. And finally, in 2012, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama go, nah, they're not terrorists because they're doing it for us. So that's what I say. This lie that's being pushed on the American people about these monsters in Iran. The only goddamn monsters in the area is us. Iran didn't attack Iraq. We did. Iran didn't attack Afghanistan. We did. Iran didn't attack Syria. We did. Iran didn't attack Libya. We did. You know, and then we take it outside the Middle East. We go to Serbia. We go to Somalia. We're the ones with the blood on our hands, not them.
Well, when you say it like that, I mean, it's kind of, you know, sounds bad. But
yeah. Yeah. I mean,
we don't ever talk about that. And that's not anything that anybody in the United States hears. But it turns out, though, that even the facade of unanimity of the narrative that we've been trying to pretend is starting to shake a little bit, especially among some of our allies who were trying to shame into sending their troops and their ships into to send them to the bottom of the Persian Gulf, in losses to try and do something that our own Navy isn't even going to attempt so far.
Right.
The first time in the last 12 or so hours, I had a couple of British folks that had come out and said, yeah, about that. So first of all, there was the former MI6 leader, director, I think is the title they use there. He came out and said, look, the fact is Iran has the upper hand. We just got to be honest about this. They have the upper hand. I thought we had a chance at the beginning, but it hasn't worked out that way. And then former Minister of Defense Shops said this.
We've reached a stage where this is actually an unwinnable war, and Trump thought that the regime might just collapse. It hasn't. And in that situation, where you can't really find who the commanders are, where they are, where the instructions are coming from, and you've got these sort of drones, the Shahid drones, which are being fired inexpensively, sometimes wiping out $1 billion of American kit in a single hit from a drone, which is maybe $30,000. That makes it a very, very difficult war to win in any conventional terms. And so I don't think we're going to see an ending to this, which is, okay, we raise the white flag and we give up. I don't think that's going to happen here.
Yeah, that's certainly not going to happen on the Iranian side, but maybe it should happen on our side. But I don't get the feeling that it's going to. In fact, it seems to me that we're about ready to escalate and to ramp this up a bit with ground forces. But, I just have to ask, is there any chance that even our closest allies can get through the president and say, listen, this is an unwinnable war? He said it right there. The Iranian side has the upper hand, according to the MI6, et cetera. At some point, these messages have to get through, or do they?
Well, they will eventually once oil hits $150 or $200 a barrel. Once the price of gas in the United States has doubled, you know, so right now down in Florida, it's gone up $1.10 from $2.54 to $3.64 last I checked. It's probably higher by now. But once the gas here is like $6, $7 a gallon, then the pressure is going to build on the president. But the economic damages that are being done to other countries, because it's not just the oil, the liquid natural gas, and the fertilizer. Those are the big three. But we've now learned that helium, the Persian Gulf is a major supplier of helium. There's a helium shortage, and you need helium in order to make computer chips. So all of a sudden, the computer chip industry is going to have to slow down production. You slow down production, that means other things that depend on those chips aren't getting produced. Sulfuric acid. I just learned this yesterday. That's a major supplier of sulfuric acid as well, which is a critical component in making fuel, turning uranium into processed uranium fuel. And there are other applications that it's critical. So these economic the disruption of the supply chain is going to continue to spread and spread and spread. And the world is going to be not just in a recession, the technical definition of recession, 2 quarters of negative growth. Well, we don't have to wait for 6 months to figure out, are we going to have negative growth? We're going to have it. The real question is, are you going to go below 10, you know, a drop in 10%? If that happens, that's called a depression. Yeah. And I think we are candidly on the cusp of having a global depression as a result of this until those Straits of Hormuz are open. And even when they're open, it's not going to be a quick turnaround.
Well, and let me just point out one other thing very much related. This is, I believe this is today. Yes, this is today. So Zulfagari, is saying that the Strait of Hormuz will not be the same as it was before the war. We have rewritten the maritime rules. The decision to grant a transit permit ship will rest solely with us. They don't seem to be thinking that, quote, after this war, things will go back to the way it was before.
Correct.
They said it will not go back to the same. What are the implications of that? And does he have the wherewithal, meaning the Iranian side, do they have the wherewithal to actually enforce that?
They do. And then we'll be seeing that over the next few weeks where the United States is going to try to force it open and we'll lose ships in the process. And we're going to lose ships that we really can't afford to lose. It's not like we got, we're nowhere near the strength that we had during World War II. I mean, we're just a fraction of that. So none of the other countries in the Gulf, not the Saudis, Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, none of them have a navy. None of them have any capacity to control that strait. And so what Iran has discovered out of this is how unprepared the world was. And so now they're going to charge an entrance fee. You know, it's like the, you got a cover charge. You want to come into the Persian Gulf, you know, fine, you know, $2 million. And what they're going to do though, is they're going to break the back of the petrodollar, because all that oil that's going to come in and out of that, they're going to pay for it with Chinese yuan. And China's more than happy to just make the United States twist, turn, and suffer a little bit.
That would have catastrophic economic impact for us if petrodollar gets broken. I mean, just catastrophic.
Yeah, and that's where it's headed.
And especially if you're talking, it's our top of it already. I mean, we'll just keep it in a depression a recession at the moment. But a recession when you start having interest rates go up because nobody's buying our debt. I mean, we just can't survive that.
Well, and that's the other thing. This has created an economic crisis. So these countries are now starting to, they need money. So they're selling their U.S. treasuries to raise cash. And so that flood is going to further depreciate the U.S. dollar. And it's going to put pressure, you know, Trump wants lower interest rates, but the pressure is in the opposite direction, that the interest rates are going up. And United States, it's caught, and the evidence that we're caught is the simple fact that Trump and Bessent, they didn't hesitate a moment to lift sanctions on Russian oil and Iranian oil. That tells you right there, because if your policy goal is to bring them to heel and you're going to use that oil as pressure, then why do you take that pressure off? Because
I don't know if you heard, we out jujitsued Iran. Yeah, that's what Bessie explained. And so we're all to explain that we out. So it's a brilliant stroke of mentality, apparently, by
the president. Scott, that's called a chokehold. Iran's got a chokehold on us. That's a jujitsu move too. And that, and if you keep it in place long enough, it can kill you.
That was another cringeworthy thing. I'll not long quickly forget. Listen, in the last bit of time we have here, I want to kind of move the lens back a little bit further, because everybody's, for understandable reasons, all focused on what's happened here in the Persian Gulf and Strait of Hormuz and this war itself. But I can't help but wonder, and especially when you look and you see that our interceptor missile rate is already, we've expended so much that we might have a couple of months left of all the categories. I think the THAAD interceptors may be near exhaustion already, but maybe a couple of months left. Iran has definitely not been brought to its heels. In fact, they've weathered everything that we have and are now getting more bold and cocky, actually releasing their own Lego videos to kind of to mock us even further. What do you think would happen if we ended up getting into a war with China over a Taiwan scenario, where the opponent would be somewhat more capable with military apparatus?
Well, we don't. We're completely out of Patriot PAC-3 missiles. Now, they may be going back. There may be some stockpiles of PAC-2s left, but and I was able to. This was open source data, but they published how many were being produced every year. 4,620 PAC-3 missiles produced since 2015. That's the total. That 4,620 is capable of shooting down 2,310 ballistic missiles or drones. Okay, so we know that we deployed about 1,000 of those missiles, PAC-3s, to Ukraine, and Russia has fired more than 12,000 missiles and drones. So we know that whatever Patriots were involved there, they're completely expended, and right now. Iran has fired well over 3,000 missiles. Well, if they fired over 3,000 missiles and you tried to use a Patriot on each one of those, that'd be 6,000 missiles. That's more than we have. And so the numbers, THAAD's gone too. I mean, the THAAD numbers were like a total of 900. It is just the United States has developed these very expensive systems that are not mass produced. And now that they're not mass produced, when you get into an enemy that's able to hit you with a drone swarm or whatever, you rapidly find out, hey, we've disarmed ourselves.
That's just astounding that we have done that. I mean, that is the epitome of short-sightedness and myopic behavior, that we are continuing to now. We should, by all accounts, with those inventory numbers being what you talked about, the only rational course of action is to get this war the hell off the table by any means necessary, ASAP. Yeah. But it looks like we're about ready to go in deeper. We had Dr. Robert Pape on this afternoon, who says he has war gamed this stuff out for decades. And he says if we cross he calls it a third barrier, the third threshold, is that if we cross this third one, which I won't bother you with the first stuff, but the bottom line is if we go in on the ground here, he thinks that will start an escalatory spiral that then, if it turns out the way you think that it would too, of a disaster, that instead of withdrawing, that we would then escalate, and that would cause a Vietnam-type escalation here, but we can't sustain even that, and it comes at the expense of everything else. I mean, we could literally lose the entire empire, if you will, of our global capabilities right now. I mean, that's how serious this could be.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, like I said, Trump is trapped. He got trapped by the Israelis. He listened to them. And then once he realized that he's caught, he's in a corner, can't get out, then he's going to start lashing out and, Hegseth will get fired and, maybe Jared Kushner will get excommunicated from the family. Trump's not going to take any responsibility for this at all. I bet he'll blame Tulsi Gabbard for not giving him the correct intelligence. Mark my words, Tulsi Gabbard will be one of the scapegoats.
Well, speaking of Tulsi Gabbard, which we weren't, Joe Kent will be on the show tomorrow. So maybe he'll give us a little insight into that. By the way, at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, we're going to have Joe on, and he's going to give us the scoop of what, at least what he can tell us without getting into trouble. But we're going to have some firsthand experience about what may have been going on, in fact, who's been telling whom what. I'm gravely concerned about where this is going, especially if we cross that threshold into ground. Because, I mean, can you just imagine, and we'll just leave it with this, we go in on the ground, whether it's Karg, whether it's Kashim Island, whether it was some insane attempt to grab the nuclear material somewhere, and any of them, they all go the way that we think that they will, which is a disaster. Can you see President Trump going, all right, well, boys, we tried it. It didn't work. Now let's just get the best deal we can, get it off the table and move out of here. Or do you think he might do something different?
Yeah, no, I think he'd be inclined to double down. That's just his nature. And, you know, at that point, it's going to become dangerous. But, you know, I can see China's happy to egg this on, because it knows that, you know, the United States has made no secret about its desire to defeat China and destroy China. And the Chinese are saying, here's an ample great opportunity to further weaken the United States so that it can't carry out its designs on us.
And if some of my intel that I've gotten is true, that the Russians are thinking about launching either late spring or early summer offensive, especially coming on the heels of what may be about to happen here in the Middle East, Ukraine's going to be flapping out in the wind.
Yeah. No, Ukraine's toast. But we're in a real pickle, as is Israel, because Iran recognizes it's now got the upper hand. And despite all the happy talk of Pete Hegseth and others, Iran can continue to take us apart piece by piece.
Well, unfortunately, I guess we're going to find out. And in any case, we are always appreciate you, as always, given the
Dan,
sorry, you got Dan, some information?
Yeah, we got some breaking news, actually. And, you know, regarding the potential action this weekend, well, it's the Babylon Bee is the first one to report it, though, but the soldiers have been issued Crocs. So Trump can say he didn't put boots on the ground. That's clever.
Well, there you go. You know what?
Thank God for President Trump.
A genius move there, if I can just say.
Yes.
Yeah.
It reminds me of how he bought those $145 Florsheim shoes for all of the cameras. Do you remember that?
Yeah. The ones that fit so well for Rubio, especially.
Yeah. We've got that, actually, I think. Where is that? There we go. Yeah, we do. Yeah, there we go.
No way.
Yeah.
You had that handy?
No, wait. Does Trump have a foot fetish? What's going on?
Yeah.
Anyway.
What is up with that? There you have it. The war reporting at the top there. We've got it all covered.
Good news to go into the weekend with.
It really is. Yeah. That'll show us the way. And in any case, we really appreciate you coming on and always giving it to us straight. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. I got to jump. I got another gig to do.
I don't doubt it. We appreciate you guys, too. We appreciate you being with us through the day. Anything that happens, any changing information, I mean, if it's leg wear coming up next or any kind of upper body gear that changes, we'll certainly bring that to you as well. But you can always count on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive to bring you the best of intelligence, analysis, and information as it happens. Thank you very much, folks. We'll see you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know we don't have sponsors because we hate to hit you over the head with ads. I don't like them. So show a little love back. Subscribe, like, and send this to somebody you care about.